Well, we're pleased to have in studio Maryland Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He is joining us here to talk about the gubernatorial race. And first of all, good morning, Lieutenant Governor. How you doing?
Great, Senator. It's great to be on with you.
Oh, just C4. Come on.
C4, okay. That's that military background, always staying with titles.
Well, I want to stay with Lieutenant Governor for you for the moment. You, of course, are running to be governor on the Democratic side of the ledger. But I wanted to start, and we're going to take your emails at c4@wbl.com for your questions for Lieutenant Governor Brown. I want to start, though, because just on a personal side, we shared a moment together in Annapolis. I was in the Senate, you were in the House. And I've heard some people talk about your focus on domestic violence. I remember back then when you were on judiciary, I was in judicial proceedings, that you had a focus on domestic violence issues even back then. Could you just speak to that? Because I think a lot of people don't know that that's been part of you from the very beginning.
Sure. I mean, what we know is that, domestic violence knows no boundaries. It doesn't discriminate, you know. So regardless of race, ethnicity, faith, or where you live, families can fall victim to domestic violence. And I knew that years ago. When I was in law school, as a student, I was on the Batter Women's Assistance Project and representing women in getting temporary restraining orders and protective orders and hearing their stories and learning more about this cycle of violence. So when I joined the General Assembly 16 years ago, I took that up as a cause. And then, of course, unfortunately, my family tragically came face to face with domestic violence when my cousin Kathy was murdered in August of 2008. So I redoubled my efforts working with the advocates and so many as we have driven down violence against women and children in this state.
Well, the only reason I brought that up, I knew that wasn't a just come to issue for you, that you had been involved with that for a while, and a lot of people did not know. Let's talk about some of the issues that are facing us today, Lieutenant Governor Brown. Let's talk about the issue of the budget. One of the things we have seen over the last 8 years, you being, of course, Lieutenant Governor, you weren't responsible for the budget as the governor was. We have seen an increase in spending each year. According to the organization that represents all 50 states, they have said that we are one of four states that continues to increase spending. Now, you and the governor would say that you decreased cut to the increase of the budget. Do you see a point where we can begin to at least hold spending static so we don't have these ongoing structural deficits?
Sure. So let's back up just a second. Under both Democrat and Republican governors before O'Malley Brown took a number of actions that created a structural deficit that we inherited. So we came in and, you know, certainly asked Marylanders to sacrifice more. We hit this recession, tried to eliminate the structural deficit. We're on the verge of doing that. But keep in mind that during these last 8 years, number one is we're the only administration that has sent a budget each year of the 8 years within the spending affordability guidelines. And you're very familiar with what that means. All of our predecessors came in, big budgets, and relied on the General Assembly to make the difficult cuts. Not for us. We came in within spending affordability as well as debt affordability on the capital side. In some of those years, we saw negative growth. So what we have in state government, as you know, and what we wrestle with is so much of state government is formula driven, right? Our aid to K through 12 education is based on a formula. Aid to local law enforcement is based on a formula. And there are a lot of different components. One of them is just growth, right? More students in the school, the formula drives up spending. So when we talk about increased spending in state government, it's these formulas that we've all agreed on that should inform our decisions to fund different programs and services. So every year we've had to go in and cut those formulas. We've had to shave off of the top. And when I say shave off, I don't mean shave off and put somewhere else. I mean the money wasn't there. The revenues weren't there. So we had to sort of slow down the growth that the formulas were driving. So every year a balanced budget. Every year in the last 8 years within spending affordability. And we've actually reduced the size of the executive branch in relation to per capita growth in state government. It's smaller today. It hasn't been this small since the days of Governor Mandel.
You mentioned the issue of forced to spend more because of the structural nature of spending on education and other things. But we have seen tax increases aplenty, a lot of folks would say, in the state, whether it is the sales tax increase, which immediately occurred in 2007, or the alcohol tax, tobacco tax, vehicle emissions fees, registration fee. What would you say to Marylanders about the next 4 years, if there's a Brown administration next 4 years, about at least looking at some of these increases, because a lot of Marylanders feel like they're being nickel and dime.
Sure. And the very best thing I think I can say, or really good news, let's put it that way, is I don't see the need in the foreseeable future to have to raise taxes in Maryland. So I don't see that happening. That's good news. We've asked Marylanders to give a lot over the years in order to fund our schools, to fund transportation infrastructure improvements. But the other thing that I've called on during this campaign is comprehensive tax reform. Now, you know, there are some that are going to say, well, I'm going to reduce this tax and that tax. You can't reform your tax code piecemeal. You've got to look at all of the revenues that we receive, because you have to look at that in relation to our expenditures. Because I don't think anybody, or very few people at worst, want to see us roll back investments in education, roll back investments in public safety, the environment, and health care. So how do you protect your investments while in the Brown-Ullman administration, our tax reform will have two priorities. One, relief to working families, right? So if we can find tax relief, whether it's the sales, income, property, let's look for that and provide relief. Number two is, let's look for opportunities, real opportunities, to provide either relief or tax credits to employers to invest in job-creating activities in Maryland. There's been a lot of discussion on this campaign around the corporate income tax. The reason why I'm not waving the flag and saying let's roll that back is because, as you know, two out of every three private sector jobs created in America, and Maryland is no different, are created by small and entrepreneurial business. They don't pay the corporate income tax. So to talk about rolling back the corporate income tax, it doesn't give relief to the vast majority of Maryland employers. So in my tax reform, we'll be looking at those provisions that really help the small and entrepreneurial businesses, give them tax relief. They're more likely to invest in their companies. Those investments create jobs. That creates revenue by expanding the tax base. That's a good thing.
Can I put a friendly amendment on, Lieutenant Governor? Because a lot of small business people that call me would say, yes, tax relief, Lieutenant Governor, for small businesses is a wonderful thing. But the regulatory atmosphere that we have in this state is so cumbersome, particularly on small business people. Would you also look at some regulatory reform?
Absolutely. In fact, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because what you just shared with the listener corroborates, it confirms what I'm hearing as well when I'm out in the business community. When you ask business leaders, tell me the, you know, four or five things that we could do to strengthen Maryland's business climate, probably the first thing you hear, even before taxes, is regulatory and licensing, and that government is cumbersome. We're slow to move. We regulate in important areas because everyone wants to protect the environment.
Sure.
Everyone wants to protect consumers and the workforce, but we do it in a way that's overly cumbersome. So in my 5-part jobs plan that I rolled out about 4 weeks ago, in the jobs plan, point number 4 is sort of, I don't say reinventing government, but certainly transforming, reforming government so it's more responsive to the public, which means businesses as well, and we're going to reform our regulatory environment.
Now, one of the things that's come up, Lieutenant Governor, is the last 8 years have been, by some of light of estimates, very partisan when it comes to, even though the Republicans don't have a lot of say in the state. Would you, if a Brown administration comes in, would you begin to reach out to Republicans? Would you begin to reach out to independents? An email I received. Jackie asked, would you strive for bipartisan support more?
Jackie, I spent 30 years in the United States Army working with men and women from all four corners of this country. And as you can imagine, in the military, we don't even know whether our brothers and sisters in arms are Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or any other party or affiliation, because we work to make progress, we work to achieve results, and we look for the common ground. Now, I get that I'm now in a different business, a line of work. I'm in elected politics where we understand and know who's a Democrat, who's a Republican, who's an Independent. But it's that same approach to problem solving that I developed and adopted in the military that I will bring to a Brown-Ullman administration. I'm looking for the best talent, and I'm looking for like-minded individuals who are willing to solve the challenges and the problems that arise, regardless of party affiliation.
And also, on top of that, too, Lieutenant Governor, when you're talking about the atmosphere for this state, education, we've been number one education, according to Education Week, for six years in a row. The governor likes talking about that. But almost half of our students that graduate, a little less than half, still need remediation in math and English once they get to college. Will a Brown administration begin looking, though, at what those deficiencies are in our high schools, where we still see young people needing zero credit courses you have to take for remediation in those areas, even though we're number one?
Yes. In fact, when I mention Maryland's rankings, and you mentioned, you remind us, you know, number one, ranked number one 6 years in a row, I don't put a period after that sentence. That there's a comma or a semicolon, because what comes next is even more important. How do we build on that progress? That's why when you look at the 16 policy proposals that I've introduced or rolled out during the course of this campaign, a full one-third of them deal with education, expanding universal pre-K. Any college president will list among their top 10 things that you can do to improve college readiness and college completion. They'll point to pre-K.
And you can pay for that.
And you can pay for it. In my plan, when we go to a universal half day, it's a 2% increase in our education budget. We can afford that. And because of expanded gaming and the provisions in the law that we established, the revenues are there. We can pay for that. When we go to universal full day pre-K by 2022, we're going to have to look at more traditional funding relationships with county government. And we have from now until 2022 to figure it out. We won't start in 2021. We'll start in the first year of the Brown-Ullman administration, what we need to do to get the universal full day by 2022.
We're speaking of Maryland Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. He's here in studio with us. We're looking, hopefully, to have him more later on after these elections are over and talk with him more if he is the Democratic candidate for governor. But let me ask you this. Let's get to Maryland Health Connections, because one of the things I did want to ask you about that, people know that you were involved with BRAC, with the whole base realignment program. That was one of your functions as Lieutenant Governor. They also know about the ACA, Affordable Care Act. What would you say to people that would say, Lieutenant Governor, based on what I see so far, I'm just not confident that you will be overseeing, that you will be monitoring, that you will be administrating? Because many of your answers are, when it comes to the ACA, you were kind of overseeing, but from a different area of it. How would you answer that?
Right. And so voters are going to look at a number of things. They'll look at my involvement in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, as you mentioned, base realignment closure, the work that I've done to reduce domestic violence, the work we've done to support veterans, the work we've done to support children in foster care, and a number of other things. On the Affordable Care Act, when we set out to implement the Obamacare, President Obama's signature policy and program. Just like the president when he rolled out the federal exchange, and just like every state in the nation, we experienced technical challenges. The states that did well, Connecticut and Kentucky, the common denominator there, they selected Deloitte Consulting. You know, we went with IBM. I mean, go figure, household name.
That's okay.
Big in technology, and our contractors failed to deliver as promised. What we did on October 1st, just as the federal government did and just as every state did, is we evaluated the situation, and we reorganized the leadership at the exchange. We refocused the vendors and fired some of them. Some of them were fighting with one another. And after evaluating the resources and capabilities at the exchange, and keep in mind, the exchange is more than a website.
Sure.
Okay. Exchange is a system that includes men and women who are doing the work. We plussed up the call centers and the navigators, and a lot of manual workarounds. What do we mean manual workarounds? The technology doesn't work, so you manually do the processing. And as a result of that work, we were able to not just meet our goal of 260,000 Marylanders enrolled, but 340,000. You know, and these are real Marylanders. This isn't just a number. You know, this is that, you know, single parent child has a pre-existing condition. They were priced out of the market 6 months ago. Today they can afford health insurance. There are countless stories of Marylanders who couldn't get insurance 6 months ago that can now get it through the exchange.
But from an administrative standpoint, one of the questions that people would have is not necessarily you weren't involved as much as the governor was. And setting this up, where kind of you went around the regular procurement process, not you, but the governor set up, went around the regular procurement process by Comptroller Peter Franchot, had questions about that. In the future, would you really consider when these projects come along to use the regular procurement process and not go around it so maybe we can avoid some of these issues?
Actually, and I'm glad that you give me the opportunity to address the procurement, because in all the debates in the forums, you know, when you're talking about 60-second responses and
it's hard to do.
Great. So the exchange was given the exempt procurement process, just like the stadium authority has, and they're going to build the $1.1 billion school construction in Baltimore City, and like the university system has. There are a number of state agencies that are exempt, and the exemptions are designed to give them greater flexibility. Here's the interesting thing. while they were given the exempt status, they still adhered to many of the provisions, most if not all, in the structured procurement process. And as a result, Deloitte didn't even respond to the RFP because it was too cumbersome. Maryland's procurement...
Maybe they should have.
Maybe they should have. Okay. But it's a very cumbersome procurement system, and procurement reform is something that many people in Maryland are calling for and we're going to be looking at. So it's a cumbersome procurement system. Look, you know, the Attorney General's office was involved in the procurement. They helped scope out this exempt procurement. They reviewed every contract bid that came in. There are a lot of eyes on this procurement. But as a result of our structure, we didn't even get the most competitive, like Deloitte, to respond to the RFP. So we need to certainly reform our procurement system. But in the meantime, what we're doing, and just let's kind of close this piece here, or at least, you know, complete this portion, we're adopting the technology from Connecticut, proven technology. The reason why we're going with Connecticut and not the federal exchange, because a lot of people are saying, hey, go with the federal exchange. The federal exchange doesn't have the robust Medicaid system. We've got 1 million Marylanders on Medicaid. And if we go to the federal system, then we're really walking away from the 1 million Marylanders on Medicaid, because we won't be able to service their health insurance programs as they have changing life circumstances for 12 to 18 months. We don't want to do that. Connecticut is proven. It'll support our Medicaid system that's working well. That's why we're going with Connecticut.
That wasn't too painful, was it?
No.
Time is up on us. But let me ask you this, a final question to you. We have not been able, unfortunately, to get the type of relationship I would have liked with Governor Martin O'Malley, to speak with him on an irregular basis, whatever basis. If there's a Governor Anthony Brown, can we talk with you?
Absolutely.
Get you on the air.
Absolutely. I'd love to do that. I would love to talk to you and your listeners so that we can share with them. My style is very open. It's inclusive. It's collaborative. This public conversation's helpful for me. It's helpful for your listeners, and it'll be great for the state.
Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, thank you very much for the time.